But I just wanted you to speak to that concern that they expressed.
Right. I'm not sure I know exactly which reference got changed that they were thinking of. The plan does continue to refer to the carbon benefits of switching from fuel oil as a home heating fuel or commercial heating fuel to natural gas, because there are big carbon and economic benefits to that. And then, as you note, there are references to increasing use of compressed natural gas as a vehicle fuel, especially for heavy vehicles. So I met with Northwest Natural yesterday as well, and we had a similar conversation. I think they're sensitive to references to fossil fuels, kind of blanket, including everything in there with coal and oil, which are, you know, in almost every case, the highest carbon option. And so I can appreciate their perspective. I think there's also some merit in recognizing that all those fossil fuels deliver carbon emissions, and although natural gas can cut emissions in half, we need to find a way to an 80% reduction. So there is a role for natural gas, but we were using the more general term fossil fuels.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, let's move on into the sign-up sheet, please.
Yeah, I believe we have about 28 left on the list. And the first three, please come on up, are Terry Parker, Lowen Berman, and Bob Solinger. And they'll be followed by Rehana Ansari, Tom Sinsick, and Mac McKinley.
Okay, Mr. Parker, why don't you go ahead first?
Thank you. Terry Parker. I'm obviously wearing my own hat today. Much of what this plan represents is a bias anti-automobile car hater mindset. Transit use is promoted, even though public transit on average uses more energy per passenger mile as measured in BTUs and creates more emissions per passenger mile as measured in CO2 than driving a modern fuel-efficient car. Nearly 10% of the jobs in the U.S. are tied to the auto industry. History clearly demonstrates higher rates of personal mobility, such as driving, significantly contributes to greater economic productivity, which in turn generates more family wage and better paying jobs. Attempting to thwart driving is a class separating attack on the economy. Remember, people driving cars paid for TriMet's new bridge. Equity requires that public transit must become more financially self-sustainable. And with over $800 million of bicycle infrastructure in the TSP, adult bicyclists must start paying their own way. Any price assessed on carbon must equally apply to TriMet. If the city follows through with the attempt to inhibit driving by the public, the city must set the example by eliminating the entire City of Portland auto fleet, including cars used by elected officials. Likewise, since individual airline miles have about the same carbon footprint as driving a fuel-efficient car, air travel by public officials must be severely restricted, and the number of flights in and out of PDX capped. To limit just blowing hot air and reduce energy consumption in the home, financial disincentives must be implemented for the purchase and use of mechanical clothes dryers. Incentives and new building codes are necessary to promote clotheslines and the drip-dry method. Any plan also must mandate that single-family home demolition be replaced by deconstruction. Mechanical demolition wastes reusable resources, fills up landfills, and sprues dust, dirt, and hazardous materials into residential neighborhoods. Finally, totally absent and missing is managing the elephant in the room. The reality that overpopulations of humans poses the greatest threat to the environment and climate change. Without advocating for smaller families by promoting contraception and no more than two biological children, everything else is just a Band-Aid. Dealing with the elephant is an absolute must. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Lowen Berman. I hate to rain on the congratulatory parade, but I believe that the 2005 Climate Action Plan is simply too little and too late. Please keep in mind the tragedy of the many thousands who have died in the past weeks in South Asia due to climate change. Please listen to Pope Francis as he speaks clearly about climate justice and the relationship of climate change to poverty, about the ways in which global corporate capitalism and the culture that accompanies it have caused the climate crisis and are the primary obstacles to addressing it. The current Climate Action Plan fails to address both the urgency of the climate crisis and the social and economic changes that will be required if humanity and hundreds of other species are to survive. Right now, we are in a last-ditch effort to avoid Armageddon. We need action on the scale of World War II mobilization. We need gas rationing and victory gardens. We need wheel mills and solar panels pouring off of assembly lines just like the tanks and planes poured off in the 1940s. We need every building in Multnomah County to be appropriately insulated. We need free public transportation and public control of the entire energy sector. We need a Manhattan Project to develop new forms of renewable energy production. We need all of this and more. We need immediate action to dismantle the fossil fuel economy and create a sustainable one. We need profound economic and cultural changes. The plan before the City Council pretends we can solve the climate crisis with little sacrifice and within the context of our present economic and social systems. The plan mentions but fails to address the impact of our consumption on the world's carbon footprint and the extent to which our culture of greed has been responsible for the destruction of the world's ecosystems and the impoverishment of so many of its peoples. The Pope has called for an economic, social, and cultural revolution. The Climate Action Plan does not begin to meet that standard. Thank you for listening. Please consider the words of Pope Francis.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bob, welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland. I'm here today on behalf of Audubon to endorse this plan and express our appreciation to the work of staff and the various committees that worked on it. This is one that actually we did not serve on, but they did a great job, and I appreciate their work. I want to focus on two things very quickly. The first is the fossil fuel export policy. First of all, we appreciate the mayor's leadership in rejecting the Pembina proposal, and we hope we will remain strong as they continue to advocate for that facility. We think it's essential that you move forward with a fossil fuel export policy that deals with all the various fossil fuels. We're going to continue to see the Columbia Corridor targeted for export of fossil fuels, and we think it's critical that the city have a policy that does not promote development of fossil fuel export infrastructure that will sustain those industries for decades to come. We need to be moving in the opposite direction, and we need a policy that gets us there. On that same issue, we disagree with those that say that we should wait for the state or the feds or the international community to lead on this. We have seen year after year after year of no leadership. Like most environmental change, it's going to start at the local level, and what we do here can trickle up. We have the power to act locally, and we should do that. So we encourage you to move forward quickly on that. The second thing I wanted to flag is floodplains. One of the first places we're really going to see the substantive impacts of climate change is going to be in terms of our rivers and our streams and flooding. We have a nice template for aggressive action on Johnson Creek, but we need to look at the Columbia Corridor. We need to look at the Willamette River. We need to look at the Columbia River. And we need to do a lot more to protect, preserve, and restore our floodplains. It's alluded to in this plan. But the metrics are not there, and I think it's very important that we start to focus very concretely on this. It's one of the toughest things we're going to have to do because the edges of our rivers and our streams are high-value real estate, but we've got to cross that threshold and take aggressive action there. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay, next ones, please.
Next three are Rehana Ansari, Tom Sinsick, and Mac McKinley, and they'll be followed by Patrick O'Haron, Jack Herbert, and Elise Cogburn.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Anna, you want to start?
Sure. Hello again, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Rehana Ansari here on behalf of the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance appreciates the effort that the City of Portland and Multnomah County have undertaken to update the Climate Action Plan. We understand that climate change is a significant challenge, and we appreciate the attempt to reduce carbon emissions. We are pleased the city and county have analysis showing that our community has reduced carbon emission levels by 14% since 1990, while the population has increased 30%. While this progress is significant, we agree that more needs to be done. We share similar goals within the plan, specifically around a state transportation package and increased investments in transportation infrastructure. We're also supportive of the plan's objective to improve freight mobility within and through the Portland metro region. The efficient movement of goods is critical for economic prosperity, but also for minimizing emissions that may result from congestion. We are, however, concerned about proposals for local adoption of a carbon pricing mechanism and a local fossil fuel export policy. A carbon pricing mechanism would disproportionately burden low-income populations and compromise city and county equity goals. Further, we believe that these proposals will have a minimum impact on carbon emissions, particularly at a global scale. While these actions would have little impact on our total emissions, they would be detrimental to businesses in the Portland metro region and make it less affordable for businesses to grow and develop. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Welcome.
Mayor Hales and City Commissioners, my name is Tom Sensick. I'm a family nurse practitioner with 33 years of advancing public health through the work of families that I've been serving and also in my community. Today, at this time of global climate disruption, we have a critical opportunity and obligation to prevent the many health catastrophes that are quickly descending on this and the next generation and will decimate future generations and the earth on which we are to care for. The Climate Action Plan recognizes that carbon emissions are the problem and must be reduced. In order to do this, serious and immediate policy and actions are needed, not just by the city, but by the state and federal government. While a Climate Action Plan is laudable, the timetable may sadly be too late. While we are already paying the price for carbon emissions in forest fires, drought, reduced snowpack, warming Columbia River, no one is paying for the carbon. Paying the true price of carbon with carbon pricing is a clear pathway to force the reducing of carbon emissions. Now, the thing that's been the equity issue, what we need now to call for is a dividend on carbon that goes back to all of the people, thereby making it an equitable practice. In fact, this measure is still alive in the state legislature as we speak, which is very interesting in this late session. So I have taken the time out of my day to ride my bike, to do my civic duty, to strongly support the Portland City Council joining other cities across the state, Eugene, Hood River, Corvallis, Milwaukee, and Ashland, in calling for the state price on carbon. But also, please ask that you put on an amendment to attach an equitable dividend back that goes to all of Oregonians on an equitable basis. With this, will this weekend, as you said, set a new record high? The time to act is now. And on a side note, why do I have to buy coal from Pacific Power?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Mac McKinley. This is an ecological message. The people of Portland and Multnomah County have received in the Climate Action Plan a gift of hope and wisdom, a document of collaboration and inspiration for all our work. Will it become a false hope and a lie? We all live in one world. We all live in the same world. Even while we plan our good works, there are forces outside of here doing their work, undermining what we do. These are blind, obsolete, single-purpose, gargantuan forces that have the power to destroy the living earth itself. They come with trains, ships, and pipelines full of fossil fuels. They mound the carbon, build holding tanks and terminals, careless of the human, of the harm they do to humans, to us and our communities. If we fail to take them into our plans, if we fail to stop them dead in their tracks, we will bear responsibility for their devastation. Yes, these are wonderful plans for urban canopy, for renewable energy, for conscientious resource use in agriculture, for economic justice, for sustainable transportation. But are all these things just a little show to make us feel good? Because it will all be for nothing if we stand by and let these blind monsters and their accomplices in government and other industries destroy our earth. If this plan is a real start, it must be accompanied by demands that no fossil fuel terminals or export facilities be allowed to operate or exist in the Northwest. If this plan is for real, you will demand that all governments and public bodies divest from all fossil fuel investments now. To make this plan work, it needs a foundation. It needs to take all real world threats into account. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Next three are Patrick O'Haron, Jack Herbert, and Elise Cogburn. And they'll be followed by Ann Littlewood, Harlan Schober, and Richard Tennant.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. My name is Patrick O'Haron. I live in North Portland. I'm a general surgeon and a board member of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, and I'm a member of the Portland Climate Jobs Committee. First, I want to express support for the Climate Action Plan. There's some really great things about it, perhaps the most importantly, that it exists, and that Portland has been reducing emissions while providing an excellent quality of life to many of its citizens. But the climate plan recognizes that these benefits have not been shared equally by all the citizens, and the focus on equity, it's also fantastic, as are the opposition to coal exports, the attempt to quantify our emissions based on consumption, and the inclusion for the need to push the state legislature to start putting a price on carbon. That said, I want to urge two things. The first is to strengthen the plan, and second, and most importantly, is to ambitiously implement it. If there is ever a time to act boldly and break the mold of cautious politics, surely climate change presents one. Increasingly alarming reports warn us of the catastrophic consequences of allowing global temperatures to rise above 2 degrees Celsius, yet we're on track to blow past the 2,900 gigatons of carbon dioxide that scientists predict will cause that 2 degrees of warming in perhaps as little as 15 years from now. To paraphrase the bulletin of atomic scientists who possibly put it best, despite some modestly positive developments in the climate change arena, current efforts are entirely insufficient to prevent the catastrophic warming of Earth. Leaders are failing to perform their most important duty, ensuring and preserving the health and vitality of human civilization. Surely climate catastrophe is a global problem, so what can Portland do that will have an impact? Well, Portland can lead. We can be a model city, an example of what is possible when we all work together. We can emulate cities like Copenhagen in Denmark or Greensburg, Kansas, and countries like Costa Rica and the Maldives that are well on their way to being carbon neutral in the relatively near future. Portland can oppose all fossil fuel exports and divest the city from fossil fuels in the recognition that we're all in this together. We all share one Earth whose atmosphere, land, and water sustain us, and that fossil fuels burned anywhere harms each and every one of us. We can act in a way that is commensurate with the raging crisis that climate destabilization presents. And we can also act in a way to capitalize on the tremendous opportunities inherent in our transition to a low-carbon, healthier, happier, more equitable, and connected society. In my work as an acute care surgeon, I have a great responsibility to act cautiously so that I don't harm any of the patients I operate on. But when I have a patient who's dying of a gunshot wound or a terrible infection, the safest and most prudent course is to act boldly and decisively. And that's the position that you all find yourselves in as leaders. Please act accordingly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Elise Cogburn. Thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners. So I am here as a recent college graduate of Portland State University. I'm also here representing Divest Portland State, a student group working with the PSU administration to divest from fossil fuels. I'm also here in solidarity with the Climate Action Coalition to urge this council to add three additions to the 2015 Climate Action Plan. The first, ban all new fossil infrastructure for export, storage, and transfer of gas, oil, and coal. Divest all fossil fuel holdings by 2020, and work aggressively to reduce carbon emissions within the City of Portland and Multnomah County by promoting renewable energy products and energy conservation. The last time CO2 emissions were this high, humans did not exist. Our dependence on fossil fuels is driving climate change at an alarming rate. This information is not new. Through my studies at Portland State, I've taken various classes through about environmental policy and regulations, and even taken a climate action course by Dr. Linda George. While the 2015 Climate Action Plan provides an abundance of valid information and processes to deal with climate change, it lacks the innovative solution that addresses not just environmental justice, but also economic and social justice. But first, I must give credit where it is due. Portland was the first city in the United States to create a local action plan by cutting carbon. For over a decade, Portland has been a leader in cutting carbon from our atmosphere. Portland and Multnomah County, within the 2015 Climate Action Plan, have committed to reduce local carbon emissions by 80% below 1990 levels by 2050, with an interim goal of 40% reduction by 2030. Even though progressive and forward-thinking, this is not possible if we are still allowing existing and new fossil infrastructure for export, storage, and transfer. Divestment is a real-world solution to our current climate crisis because it targets large corporations who are doing the most damage. But more importantly, divesting from fossil fuels is an opportunity. Imagine governments, nonprofits, universities, religious organizations, residents, and the business community working together to help drive social change to make definitive steps towards ensuring that our world will be here for future generations. Divestment of fossil fuels gives Portland the opportunity to remain a climate champion for other cities to follow and learn from. It gives Portland the opportunity to give hope, or excuse me, it gives Portland the opportunity to give the world a sense of hope. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Jack Herbert. I'd like to emphasize the testimony you had from Lowell Berman and from Bob Salinger that really pointed out this plan's a great start, but we really need to make much more drastic changes. We are not facing it. The planet we love is going under, and the environment we love here, these forests, the Douglas fir, the hemlock, cedars, I think we know from if we have winters and springs like we've had, those forests are going to go. And so I think we care enough about them, we need to do the work. A plan, you know, it needs to have law. It needs to know how it's going to get to where it's going to go, and it needs to have law to force that to get there. You need the positive incentives and negative incentives, and you need the programs, the specific programs you're going to do it with. There were four major problems, the inequity and all the exploitive and abusive use of human beings on this planet. You know, it's getting much worse, and our federal government is driving a lot of that, and our corporations are. We need a humane program at this level to turn that ethic around. So we've got to deal with equity. We've got to deal with jobs and economy. We've got to deal with stopping global climate change. And the chart showed us continuing population growth locally, but also climate. People have mentioned that. So clearly, you know, okay, what you need is what happened when we had Pearl Harbor. You know, we got to pool our money. Green bonds are a great idea. I don't know how we can do it, but we're going to pool our money, hire ourselves, put ourselves to work with good jobs, and you need to make sure they are good jobs or they'll be crummy ones. And we'll solve those problems, and we can do the conversion we need. Okay, let's see. I think that's all I have at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Okay. The next three are Ann Littlewood, Harlan Schober, and Richard Tennant. Thank you. And then let's go with Susan Tennant, if they're still here.
Welcome. Come on up.
And then they'll be followed by Heather Tennant, Cassidy B. Jones, and Dr. Theodora Songas.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, I thank you for your enthusiasm with the Pope's encyclical. I'm glad you're getting to make that trip. Please say hi to Francis for me.
I will.
There's a lot of congratulations in order for the CAP, but you're going to hear it again and again. It's not quite enough. It has to go further. And what I understand is your next piece of work, or one of them, is to come up with a plan for fossil fuel export policy. And I want to urge you to keep it simple. And let's just not do that. There's no way we can be a fuel hub without messing with our quality of life. And whether you do life cycle studies or point of use studies, it's just meaning burning more fuel. Every dollar spent on infrastructure for that kind of thing is a dollar not spent on something else that would be better. And we have to try a lot of other things to see what will be better, what will work. So in your deliberations about fossil fuel export policy, please, let's not go there for Portland. It was a close thing with Pembina, and thanks for the turnaround on that. What we need is a policy so we don't have to go do it case by case by case. There's a precedent for you there. When Norway was on the brink of the North Sea oil bonanza. The government there tied themselves to the mast. Before they had the money, they implemented a really rigorous policy that they could only spend so much of it. They had to invest the rest. That bound the hands of people who followed them in government. And those politicians, that the political class from that era, is still getting lots of regard for making that choice. So what we need you to do about export is to lock it down so it can't happen, so we don't have to fight each and everything. And I guarantee you, if Pembina gets its nose under the tent and resurfaces, there will be no place to hide. There'll be no place to run. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Richard Tennant, and I'm a lifelong resident of Portland, Oregon. My mom was a school teacher, one-room school teacher out at Sovies Island. My dad was a detective with Multnomah County. And I just want to testify also, be kind of redundant about the Pembina and import or exportation of fossil fuels, because it usually ends up badly for a variety of reasons. And I brought some little Smurfs for my these are little plastic deals, which are probably the end result of a lot of energy being expended for production of something that's geared for, you know, having, playing with for a day and then throwing it into a landfill. So I think if we are going to spend energy recklessly with abandon, we're going to get the end of a physical process, because the law of physics is immutable, as is the law of nature. And I'm here to protect, hopefully, my granddaughter and my grandchildren. And I hope that you each consider your grandchildren when you come up with a determination as to export fuel for making a one-day product.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
That's why I married him.
Smart guy.
He's been holding out on me. He's got Smurfs. My name is Susan Tennant. I've been married to Mr. Tennant for 45 years this year, and we were in a high school play at Roosevelt, and I had to marry him there. I thought I'd die. Clunky football player. He turned out really good. I'm here to tell you to speak for the children. Today I went to St. John's Historical Meeting, and I left. I said, Richard, go by the community center around the corner. What do you want to do that for? You know, the usual. Go. And so we went together as a couple, and I noticed on the left-hand side of the street a child, 7 or 8, disabled, very disabled. And it was hot. It was very hot, and the caregiver was carrying a chair above the head, kind of keeping himself shaded and pushing the cart and a toddler walking. And as they got to the St. John's Community Center, they have a blue tarp, and that's where you can get sandwiches. And I remembered how I'd taken my grandkids there. But something, as human beings, we are drawn to water. Each of you hopefully have something to drink. And there is no water in that wading pool, and it's hot. And the people will, there was nowhere else to go. There's nowhere, because not everybody can pay $4.50 to get into the pools, or let alone get there if you're pushing a chair. So that's part of my concern. In North Portland, I'm sure you all know where that is. That's where the St. John's Bridge is, with the oil farms on one side. There used to be 3 when I arrived there. I remember as a child going up that way. Now I think there's 400 or 500. And then on the other side, of course, you have your cove and whatnot. But I asked, I called somebody, I said, is this safe to go into Cathedral Park? And he says, ma'am, the dogs, it doesn't matter, because their constitution is different. But he said, I wouldn't suggest going in there above your knees, because then it could be problematic. So we are the ones that have the old garbage dump. We're the ones that have the waste facility and the car wrecking and everything, and the levees that are uncertified. Even the Vanport flood isn't certified, but we're working on that. Please remember us. St. John's is a wonderful place to grow up and be human. My eldest brother's a troubleshooter for Intel. So he retired. My sister worked for UPS and Bank America. I worked for Kaiser Permanente for 28 years in mental health, chemical addiction, a member intake service in emergency. Baby brother's a policeman, and the other one's a longshoreman. We are great people. We are proud people, and we are becoming proud as we get to know you. so give us time. But remember us when you want to put something new out there. Please let us know in advance so we can decide and help you decide too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, and if you can bring any water to these kids in the parks, it's 100-degree weather coming up. Maybe we could just turn them on for the weekend.
That's a good idea. Thank you very much.
The next three are Heather Tennant, Cassidy B. Jones, and Dr. Theodora Tsongas. And they'll be followed by Tim Miller, Rachel Lily Foiley, and Barry Jo Stoll.
Welcome.
Hello, and thank you, Mayor Charlie Hales, and to the City of Portland Council. Oh, my goodness. My name is Cassidy Jones, and I am proud to say that I was born and raised in Oregon. I'm a fellow with Oregon Climate, a statewide campaign for fair and effective climate policy, as well as a farm education intern for the Sylvia Island Center. This fall, I will enter my senior year at Knox College, not far from Chicago. Despite leaving the Pacific Northwest for my education, it is my hope, like many others, to return to the City of Roses next year when I have completed my degree in International Relations and Environmental Studies. As a young person entering the job search, my home of Portland is very high on the list for many reasons. Aside from being incredibly livable, close to my family, and a quick drive to all the outdoor recreation that my heart could desire, the environment is also very important to Portland. I must commend and relay my support for the CAP. This plan shows strong leadership from the City of Portland and will encourage others to follow suit in building strong and thorough blueprints for combating climate change. Specifically, I would like to express my gratitude for including putting a price on carbon in the 5-year priorities within the buildings and energy section. By urging legislators in Salem to take a price on to take action and price carbon now, Portland can and will strongly influence the rest of the Willamette Valley and even the rest of the state. If I may, I'd like to take the opportunity to point out some aspects of revenue distribution options in relation to carbon pricing. At Oregon Climate, we are advocating for the dividend option. This dividend is best described as a check distributed to all Oregonians, despite income levels, where you live, etc. The dividend option would ring anywhere from $500 to $1,500 to all Oregonians, and as the Portland State University studies have proved, would have a negligible impact on the economy. In fact, national studies show that there would be significant job growth with a dividend. Why use this option over why this option over using the money to fund important things such as education or healthcare? If we redistribute this revenue from carbon pricing back to everyone, it is a lasting and equitable program. Eventually, the idea is that an energy transition would occur. This does mean that the carbon dividend would dry up, making it especially important not to fund things that are so important to our state, like education and healthcare, with this dividend. By redistributing these funds equally to all Oregonians, we can create a strong and lasting program that is simple, straightforward, and the lower economic part of 2/3 of Oregonians would come out on top. Thank you again for your leadership, ownership, and time. I couldn't be more proud to call myself an Oregonian.
Thank you. Hope you do get to come back.
Mayor, maybe just respond to that very briefly. Cassidy, I actually really like the dividend idea. A problem that we have in Oregon is that obviously gasoline is a major source of carbon, and we have a state constitutional provision that was passed somewhere like 1980 that says that taxes on gasoline can only be used on roads. So we would need to repeal that provision in order to have a portion of a carbon tax that applies to gasoline used for the dividend you suggested.
Thank you.
Be a first step. Please.
No
question. Like you're next.
Hi, I'm Dr. Theodora Tsongas. I'm an environmental health scientist and retired from the state public health division. I'm a member of the Environmental Health Working Group of Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Yesterday, the Lancet Commission released its 2015 report on health and climate change. The commission concluded that climate change is a medical emergency, but because climate solutions are health benefits, getting rid of fossil fuels will reduce asthma, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases and deaths. Detriments to public health are detriments to long-term economic growth. The benefits of taking action on climate change are local and they are immediate. Whoever takes measures to combat climate change will get health benefits. Achieving a decarbonized economy and securing the public health benefits it offers is no longer primarily a technical or economic question. It is now a political one. To this end, I want to commend the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission on its climate action plan. It is comprehensive and considers public health improvements from active transport and considers equity. However, it does not go far enough. One of the conclusions of the Lancet Commission is that we have very little time to take action to prevent the very worst impacts of climate change. Developing infrastructure to replace coal with natural gas is ill-advised and will give a false sense of security, as well as expending scarce resources on a technology that is not solving the problem. We need to expend those resources aggressively on renewable energy development and implementation. Finally, the Climate Action Plan needs to promote strong actions to address climate change by asking for a ban on all new fossil fuel infrastructure for export, storage, and transfer of gas, oil, and coal, including propane, and divest from all fossil fuel holdings immediately. Portland is in a perfect position to lead. It has the political will. Let's do it, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you. My name's Heather Tennant, and my parents just spoke. I'm here because of my daughter, Joan. I also have two other children. We have been out on the picket lines with Pembina, the propane, and I thank you, Mary Hills, for being the one that, you know, took a chance and listened to the public. Fossil fuels are not the way. They're not the way. They're not the way to... we need to teach our children, our younger generations, that we have to do better. But each of you also need to leave a legacy for yourselves and your children that you are the ones that made a better place, not just Portland, but when you do the things that you do and you speak out and you listen to the vast many testimonies that you've heard of very intelligent people about how important the earth is. We can't eat money. We can't breathe money. We can't drink money. And I know that when I look at you, I see intelligent people. I may not agree with everything, just like you're not going to agree with everything I say, but I have faith in each and every one of you. And I have faith that you will do what's right to protect your children, your grandchildren, and future generations. Because if it doesn't happen now, it will be too late. It will be too late. So when you go in chambers and you discuss, this is it. This is the future. And did you want to say something? What did you want to say? No.
Pembina in the ground.
Keep fossil fuels in the ground.
Good job. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both for coming.
The next three are Tim Miller, Rachel Lillette Foley, and Barry Joe Stoll. And they'll be followed by Lise Glancy, Alex Anderson, and Jerry Grimm. Then it'll be Frazier Rasmussen with the next group.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tim Miller, and I'm the CEO of Clean Energy Works. Most of you know my predecessor, Derek Smith. I've worked side-by-side with Derek for the last 3 years in partnership with the city, and I look forward to continuing that successful work at Clean Energy Works. Our organization supports the 2015 Climate Action Plan. We're the largest home performance provider in the Northwest. We're a nonprofit that helps homeowners upgrade their homes for energy efficiency. At the same time, we're creating jobs and boosting the equity and resilience of our communities. Working with local contractors, we have facilitated energy efficiency upgrades for more than 4,500 homes now. And we support the Climate Action Plan for four main reasons. First, making homes more energy efficient will have a significant impact on carbon emissions, as has been mentioned. 20% of carbon emissions in the county are generated from this sector, And we're committed to continuing our work with the city and the county to help homeowners reduce our community's carbon footprint. Second, the Climate Action Plan outlines how to connect the economic opportunities that implementing the plan will generate with advancing equity in the region. And this connects. This connection is crucial to ensuring tangible outcomes for low-income communities and communities of color participating in carbon pollution mitigation efforts. Third, the Cully Weatherization 2.0 project that the plan highlights is an example of an emerging model that can address climate change and combat gentrification. Clean Energy Works is excited to participate in this collaborative effort and working with the city and the county to leverage how home repairs and weatherization resources can be combined to address gentrification and energy efficiency. While engaging homeowners on energy efficiency, we can also help them with the health and safety of their homes, solar energy, seismic upgrades, radon mitigation, and EV readiness. All can happen at the same time. So we're aligning multiple interests and resources and leveraging those things together so all those partners get benefit at the same time and help homeowners and help reduce our carbon footprint. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Rachel Lilit Foley. I'm a volunteer with Oregon Climate, and I'm a raging granny. And I'm also have a long history of involvement with India, and that's going to come up in a few secs. So I want to thank you for urging the state to establish a price on carbon. And I strongly support the Portland City Council joining other cities across the state and calling on the state to price carbon. So there are two things. Why a carbon price? A couple supports for that. A carbon price creates a price signal to reward innovation, encourage conservation, and discourages businesses and individuals from using and investing in fossil fuels. And another reason would be true costs of fossil fuels are currently not reflected in their prices. In 2012, climate-related disasters in the U.S. cost us $96 billion, and they are only getting worse, and polluters are not being held accountable. One of the questions that has been raised within the Climate Action Plan is how can regressive impacts for low-income populations be prevented? And the answer there that I've been thinking about is to return all revenue back to households. And that is because this is an equitable solution. Several people before me have said that it is an inequitable solution, but I just don't go with that. The lowest income Oregonians pay the largest fraction of their paychecks in energy and gasoline. By returning the revenue back in the form of a dividend, which makes it revenue neutral, the lowest income 70% of Oregonians will get more money back than they pay out in increased costs. So another result of that is that the danger of this being pulled back and people not supporting it in the long run is mitigated with this kind of a solution. Jurisdictions that have gone before us without a dividend, like Australia, where the carbon tax was successful in reducing emissions, but it was repealed last summer. And that is what happens when not everyone feels like they're sharing the benefits.
Thank you. I want to get you to wrap up because we're running out of time.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to say then is just the India thing. About how bad this whole thing is.
Okay.
At 5, okay. And I think we've got to have a hard deadline.
Make it very quick.
I had a letter from a friend in India recently. It's not just people are dying in his city. Water has been limited to use by human for human consumption. That's it. What happens to agriculture?
Thank you.
Et cetera.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stoll?
Hello. I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers around. I think I'm going to start with this one. One, that's how many home planets we have. Two, the number of days since my third neurologist said that cannabis was my best treatment option. We call that marijuana under state law because if we told it the truth at the time in the 1930s, people would have said, cannabis, you mean like on the state seal of Oregon, we've got the covered wagon covered with hemp? That's cannabis, right? And how about that sailing ship? Oh, the state seal of Oregon. What else does it have? Fossil fuels. The icon there is the merchant ship. It's got a little paddle wheel, got a little fossil fuel coming out. Well, in 1859, we had not on planet Earth drilled a single oil well. That happened later in 1859. So, I'm not here because whether or not your minds are made up. I'm here because of what your minds are made up with. And basically, it's a bunch of lies because you don't know the truth about the simplest things. So, I have some vegan hemp Oregon product. And there's 19 of them here. And there's one in the center. They're each touching each other. That's six more. That makes seven. And the outside, we have 12. And over here on the clock face, we have the same 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. This is the way it works, okay? You're trying to make squares when you should be making hexagons. You're not paying attention to the natural world. You're not paying attention to the way natural things work. And you're not going to guys like me who have expertise in energy management. I used to extract the carbon from the waste heat coming out of the furnace when I was burning natural gas, and I used that to enhance the cannabis plants that I was convicted and sentenced to prison for growing. I was also doing waste heat recovery in another place that didn't have a gas furnace, and I was collecting the heat to warm the water to enhance the agriculture.
Thank you.
So where you might want to go to NASCAR is a model of what you can learn from moonshine being illegal. They drove fast cars to get away from the cops, right? Now we have NASCAR. Now we have legal cannabis. We have energy problems because you guys don't know the simplest truths. Talk to a guy like me. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. All right, next, please.
Arlise Glancy, Alex Anderson, and Fraser Rasmussen.
Arla, how many more do we have?
Four more.
Welcome, Lise.
Is Fraser Rasmussen?
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name is Lise Glancy, the Regional Government Relations Manager for the Port of Portland. The Port appreciates the opportunity to provide comments on the City of Portland and Multnomah County 2015 Climate Action Plan. The Port recognizes the significance of climate change and the importance of climate initiatives like the Climate Action Plan. We support the city's and county's strategy and emission reduction targets. As the Climate Action Plan reinforces, we all play a role in reducing climate emissions and protecting the world for future generations. The Port, like other government entities, is reducing the impact of our operational footprint in support of our own air quality policies and priorities and ISO 14001 environmental management system. We are actively working with our customers, tenants, and stakeholders to assist them in doing the same. In the spirit of partnership, the Port mapped our emission reduction efforts and results against the Portland Multnomah County Climate Action Plan. We recently voluntarily committed to energy reporting for all port facilities and are committed to continuing our partnership on the Climate Action Plan. Given Portland's role as a gateway to other markets for the state and the Port's role as an agency charged with connecting people and businesses to market to support regional prosperity, we appreciate the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission's refinement of Objective 5 to acknowledge that freight movement by water and rail is more energy efficient and reduces additional burden on the road network, contributing to congestion and emissions. We'd recommend adding two additional action items that are included in the letter I've provided you. For Objective 4, we can't overemphasize the importance of close-in industrial land for middle-income job growth. This is important for two reasons. One, it provides higher-paying, accessible jobs in the heart of the city for our residents and offers job opportunities for our workforce without college degrees. Two, it makes the most of existing investment in transportation facilities. And under that objective, we'd recommend adding two additional action items again in my letter. In developing the proposed local fossil fuels export policy, we encourage the city and county to consider the low carbon fuels such as natural gas and propane play a critical role as transition fuels, reducing greenhouse gases and hazardous air pollutants globally and regionally. Greenhouse gas and air toxic emissions are global environmental justice issues. Consistent language within the Climate Action Plan to address the important role of low-carbon fuels would clarify and prevent conflict between proposed objectives. The port looks forward to continuing to work with the city and county and other stakeholders. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Alex Anderson. I'm a recent biology student graduate from Concordia University. I'm here today to represent the commuting working class, which does include students, educated people, elderly, disabled, healthcare professionals, and educators. There's a large population of that persons. I have here today some papers that I'd like to share with you,
please.
If I may bring this forward.
Just come to Carla and hand them to us. Thank you.
The very first page, as you'll get, as everyone can see, is a very pretty picture from Pembina's own website, and I'm very thankful that that has taken off the agenda. A big kudos to all of you for your hard work in that. Without a key, this is not science. So we could just, if I can ask you guys with me to rip this page off, please. It's obsolete. It's a distraction. And in doing so, you just created your first public action to divest from fossil fuels. Thank you. The second page is a carbon dioxide emissions coefficient by fuel example provided by the U.S. Energy Information Administration. And these are estimates, but if you look down the page, there are several different types of fuels that none of them are clean. All of them have carbon emissions. And we are at a point where what I hear is on the table that we're wanting to reduce by 80% what we had in the 90s. In the 90s, we already exceeded the upper ceiling, which is why we're having the problems today. We need to eliminate carbon emissions completely. Is that possible? Yes, it is. It takes working together. It takes getting this implemented quickly, and that's the important part. We, as of June 21st, our carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere, as taken by the Mauna Loa Observatory, which is located on the next page over, it's this cute little diagram here, was at 402.81 parts per million. That's 128 parts per million above what we had pre-industrial.
Well, let me get you to stop there, because we do have the rest of your handout, but that's a pretty dramatic statistic. Thank you. We're going to have to wrap up here because we're going to lose Commissioner Fritz. So.
Okay. Well, the rest you can probably see on your own, but just a very brief explanation of why we see carbon going up and down and up and down. It's still on an incline, which gives us about 53 years at this rate. The reason for the decline is because when plants breathe, when they start having foliage, they breathe in all of that, but we don't have enough to recover. We are at our maximum.
I never knew that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay. Who else do we have?
Gordon Folks, Jill Denny, and Mary Vogel.
I think Mary left. Yes.
And then the last person who signed up, was Steve Gutman.
Okay. I think you two might have the last word, so welcome. Please.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Gordon Folks. I'm an astrophysicist here representing 31,000 American scientists, 9,000 of us with PhDs. We all signed this statement, quote, "There is no convincing scientific evidence that human release of carbon dioxide, methane, or other greenhouse gases is causing or will in the foreseeable future cause catastrophic heating of the Earth's atmosphere, and disruption of the Earth's climate. Moreover, there is substantial scientific evidence that increases in atmospheric carbon dioxide produce many beneficial effects upon the natural plant and animal environments of the Earth, end quote. Not only is this the largest petition ever circulated among scientists, it was also promoted and signed by some of the great scientists of our time. It was signed by the greatest physicist alive today, Professor Freeman Dyson from the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton University, and the greatest meteorologist alive today, Professor Richard Lindzen of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Yet you failed to consult any of us and even refused to let any of us have our say, shutting down one meeting to avoid hearing any criticism. That's terribly, terribly wrong. When it comes to Portland's climate action plan, there are no climate performance criteria whatever. That means zero accountability. You promise no climate improvements for dollars expended. Will we get a cooler climate? Will we have fewer hot spells like promised for this weekend? Will we never have another Columbus Day storm? Will you even be able to change the slow rate of rise of atmospheric carbon dioxide? Of course not. This is fraud. The people promoting climate control have said, who cares if this turns out to be wrong? We're doing so many good things anyway. That's what it's really all about, and that makes you involved in deliberate fraud. It's time to stop scamming the science and show some respect for all scientists, for taxpayers, and for the truth. Let critics be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi there. My name is Jill Denny, and I'm the youngest member of the family that owns Portland Nursery. On behalf of my entire family, we would like to say thank you for prioritizing the environmental health of our community. I am here to show our continuing support for reducing Portland's carbon footprint. In 2014 alone, we provided Inner Portland with 11,972 trees, 14,822 native plants, 63,681 shrubs, 173,333 seed packets, and 311,877 vegetable and herb starts. We offer 220 free gardening classes a year and donate to over 400 local schools, nonprofits, and food-based programs, mainly so that children can be educated on where their food comes from and other matters such as that. To increase horticultural sustainability in education. In our letter, we have outlined many more ways that we assist Portland's response to climate change. So please consider Portland Nursery a resource, and that we're here to benefit the community and environment, or please consider that we are here to benefit the environment and community before making decisions about the comprehensive plan. And on a personal note, I recently graduated from Oregon State University with a major in human development and family sciences, as well as minors in horticulture and psychology, and I am on track to become a pediatric horticultural therapist and would like to work with the youth in the community, and we would really like that opportunity. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
By the way, thanks for coming in. You know, your family's alerted us the fact that there's some things in the comp plan which actually may put you out of business. So it's nice to put name and face together, and that is not something I think we want to see. So we look forward to working with you on that.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. Anyone else? So council have any questions for staff before we act on the resolutions? Because they are all three before us as amended. So if not, then I think we're ready for a roll call vote on the first of them.
Mayor, why don't we do it out of sequence and let Commissioner Fritz go first.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Fritz.
So thank you very much to staff and for everybody who's participated in this hearing today. I am proud that Portland is one of the cities invited to the Vatican to talk with the Pope, and I'm very proud to have been part of the previous version of the Climate Action Plan and look forward to implementing it. Thank you all for staying this long, and especially to all of the staff for all of your good work. Aye.
Bish?
The 2009 City-County Climate Action Plan was one of the proudest accomplishments of a council that I served on, and this builds on that work and enhances it. And I'm particularly pleased that we're putting equity more deeply into our plan and more intentionally. At the city's utilities, which I have the honor of leading, we've learned that what's good for the environment is also good for our ratepayers. So a lot of the kinds of practices that we've been asked to follow turn out to not only
promote a good, a healthier community and environment, but they also end up saving ratepayer dollars. So we look forward to doing our part. And I have to say, I've been on the council for 7 years, and a lot of people who come before us, I happen to know, are either agnostic, atheist, or ambivalent about religion. I have never heard a pope more celebrated in a public forum. And but I do very much appreciate much.